Hi, I'm Susan Schofer, your certified divorce coach and custody ally. This presentation is about battling parental alienation, what to do when your ex convinces your children to hate you. This is a very comprehensive 1 hour that I am spending with you. You are going to learn a lot about parental alienation. Also, listen carefully to see if you are being alienated from your children. There are some very early subtle signs. For those of you who are already being alienated, this presentation will give you so much information about what to do next. So really, this is about identifying what parental alienation really is. Do you have a mild, moderate, or severe form of it? If you're entering it, how can you recognize this and what you can do to combat it? It's an insidious form of child abuse perpetrated on the child by the alienating parent to hurt the targeted parent. There's no other way to tiptoe around it. It's unacceptable, it's unfair, it's cruel, it is child abuse. It fractures children's emotional, physical, spiritual part of their existence and changes them forever. So let's make no bones about it. This is very serious, and I speak about it very seriously. So I want to start with defining parental alienation. And according to William Burnett, psychiatry professor at the Vanderbilt University School of Medicine, parental alienation is defined by a mental condition in which a child, usually one whose parents are engaged in high conflict divorce, aligns himself or herself strongly with one parent and rejects a relationship with the other parent without any legitimate justification. What causes parental alienation? I mean, after all, who would do something like this? There are several reasons. One may be the inability of one parent to accept that the relationship with their former spouse is actually over. So they grab at anything that they can do, and maybe it's just alienating the children. Another cause is they blame the other person. So if the marriage split up, even if they are the one who walked out of the marriage, even if they may be cheated on the targeted parent, they blame them for one reason or another. And by blaming them, I guess their just desserts are, I take the children from you. Or maybe another reason is they need to have control of the children as a way to show power. They've lost control in other parts of the divorce. They can no longer keep the car away from their other spouse, or they can't say you can't live in the house. So what way to control or show they have power is then to control the children. Another cause is revenge. You did this, so guess what? I'm going to do that. You cheated on me, I'm going to take the children from you. Another cause is that maybe the alienating parent avoids the pain of divorce, of separation, and by doing so, they eliminate that pain by alienating the child against the targeted parent. It doesn't make sense, but parental alienation is not about making sense. Or another cause, they have a need to keep the relationship going between them and their former spouse by maintaining an ongoing conflict. Again, not healthy. Parental alienation is not about being healthy, but listen, the relationship is over and maybe the former spouse has moved on. Maybe they have a new love interest. Maybe they have a job that they love and they're immersing themselves into it. The person who feels harmed wants to keep that going, and ergo, what better way than to alienate the children? They know that the parent wants that child, and this is the way they can kind of suck that child into this abusive vortex. And the last cause is that the inducing of anxiety in the child in an attempt to drive this wedge between the children and the targeted parent. So loving, healthy parents, they try to promote emotional security of their children, but alienators want to increase the insecurities and fears, not because they are excited about creating insecurities and fears, but by doing so, they get the child to be more aligned with them in that parent's camp, so to speak. So which child is most vulnerable? And there has been studies done on this, and people vacillate back and forth. Can the older child be alienated better more than the younger child? Boys more than girls, younger children more than older children? And here's the answer. Any child. Any child is vulnerable. And as far as the sex and the age of the child, it's completely irrelevant. All children are fair game. So how does the alienator get the child to distance themselves from the targeted parent? And I hear this all the time. I hear consistently that a parent feels like they were a great parent. They had a great relationship with their child. What the heck happened? Well, what is the magic that the alienator has? They must have something stuck in their little bag of tricks. They must have something in their arsenal. And the truth is, all they need is to have access to the child. And think about it. In a divorce, the courts like to be equitable, 50-50 visitation. In the best interest of the child, the courts say specifically that the children need to be with both parents. So there you go. They have access to the child. The second way that the alienator can have the child distance themselves from the targeted parent is they must have the child believe that the targeted parent is either incompetent, negligent, or someone to fear. So let's say you have your time with your child and you tell your 7-year-old that it's dinner time, and if they don't put away the computer game and come to dinner, you are going to take it away. Normal things that parents say across the country, across the world. Your child doesn't do that. You give them a second warning, a third warning. Voila, you come over, you take the computer and you put it away. Then they go to see the other parent and they mention it. Well, there you go. All that parent has to say things like, well, your other parent, they don't want you to have a toy, and you'll see they will start to take away all your toys before you know it, you won't have any toys. So they plant the seed that parent is either somebody to fear, they're going to take their toys away, they won't be home. One of the things that I hear pretty consistently is, oh, well, your dad has a new girlfriend. Well, that means that he doesn't want to be with you. He's going to leave you home alone. He doesn't love you anymore. So those things sort of plant those stories. Those false narratives start to play into the child's brain, and they start to believe that the parent is incompetent, negligent, or someone to fear. And then the third component of this is that the alienator will elevate their own traits versus those of the targeted parent. And we start to see the splitting in the child. One parent is all good, the alienator, and one is all bad, the targeted parent. And we know from having parents ourselves, we know that, well, there's some people that are a little more strict than other people. So children typically know which parent is more authoritarian, more is one they can kind of get away with things. And children balance that. But that's not what happens with parental alienation. We have one parent who alienates the other parent and in the interim elevates their own traits. They are the better parent. According to the American Journal of Family Therapy, alienators use the following methods of manipulation to instill fear in the children so that children can be brainwashed. I had the word brainwashed in quotes, and it's not so much mine. Again, it's in the American Journal of Family Therapy. And that's because that's what these parents do. They brainwash their kids. And I know there's some clinicians that don't like that word, but let's call it what it is. They brainwash the kid. They have the child believe that certain things exist that don't. Again, false narratives. You will hear me use that phrase throughout this PowerPoint. These false narratives, the stories that they tell these children, children that don't even know these stories, and yet somehow they become their truth. So for example, the alienator will claim that the targeted parent never has and currently does not love or care about the child. Well, can you imagine that? You know, mom never really loved you. She really didn't want kids. And that's why it was so easy for her to leave you, because she doesn't love you. Say that 3 or 4 times to a child, and it doesn't take much to brainwash them to believe that mom left because she doesn't love you. And maybe what happened is mom has a job that just takes her out of town a lot. But she clearly loves her child. So that's one of the false narratives that an alienator can use to brainwash the child. The other method is that the alienator sees no value in the targeted parent's presence in the child's life. So they just feel like, you know, I'm the only parent that matters. These children don't need the other parent, and that's it. And so they lead that child to believe that. You don't need dad anymore. You don't need mom anymore. and the child believes that they have this one and only magnificent parent. The other method that the alienator may use is that they claim that the target parent is dangerous, abusive, or negligent. Now, that's really scary, because if a child feels like they are with a dangerous or abusive parent, the last thing they want is to be with that parent. So if there is visitation, 50-50, 1 week on, 1 week off, or every 2 weeks, whatever the visitation schedule is, and the child stops wanting to maybe see you, and they're claiming they're fearful or dangerous, or you're abusive to them, you could be rest assured that the alienator is claiming that you're dangerous. Because if the child starts to fear you, or they start to fear a parent for no reason, then the child is being brainwashed. And again, this sort of changes the dynamics of your parenting, because anything you do can be held against you. And I see a lot of you out there nodding, because that does happen. And I've heard it so many times. All I did was I grounded my 12-year-old because they didn't study for their Spanish test after, and they were watching television and they were texting their friends. So they were grounded for a weekend. And what that can morph into, that parent's no longer safe, that they're dangerous. So let's keep in mind the methods of manipulating to instill fear in the children so the children can be brainwashed is the child is told that the other parent doesn't love them. The targeted parent doesn't love them. The alienator sees no value in the targeted parent's presence in the child's life. And the alienator claims that the targeted parent is dangerous, abusive, or negligent. There are three levels of parental alienation: mild, moderate, and severe. So what does mild parental alienation look like? With mild parental alienation, the alienating parent does not recognize that they are alienating. The parent can be enlightened about the damage the alienation causes a child. So for example, you have a parent who every time they have to sit and wait for the targeted parent to come pick up the child because they're late. And they may say something like, you know what? Your dad is always late. Always late. He's always late. He's just, I don't know. He can't rely on him for anything. Wait, halt. That's alienating. That parent typically can be enlightened. You say something to them and they don't realize they've done it, which means that this alienating parent, they have a willingness to cooperate. You chat up with them and you say, you know what, that's not really great with the child. The child will start to fear the other parent. And it just isn't a good idea to do that. It's not fair to you. It's not fair to your former spouse. It's not fair to the child. And usually that parent will go, wait a minute, you're right. Okay, no more. And they're done. So mild parental alienation, while it does have a little bit of a bite to it, and there is a little bit of animosity there, that parent doesn't want to hurt the child. And the parent can be enlightened, and they do and can be willing to cooperate. Moderate parental alienation notches up a little bit. The alienating parent is completely aware that they are alienating. They know that they're saying unkind things about the targeted parent. They know that they are encouraging the child to not like that other parent. But they really aren't in the camp to take that child away from the other parent. And an alienating parent that's engaged in this moderate, in the middle of the road kind of parental alienation can be encouraged to reduce or to eliminate their behaviors. When chatting with them, discussing with them the damage that this causes to the child, not just at the present time, but in the future, they can recognize that this is not okay and reduce or eliminate an alienating behavior. So it'd be great if they would eliminate them altogether, but they may reduce down to the mild. You know what, mom, she spends a lot of money, and this is why she's irresponsible with money, always has been, always will be. Not great. You don't want to say that. But if they can be reduced down to that level, it's a lot better from where they were, and they won't escalate to severe. Severe parental alienation has a whole different look to it, a different feel to it, and it is obviously the most damaging. It's very fundamentally different from mild and moderate alienation. The alienating parent is obsessed with alienating. That is all that they are, laser sharp, hyper focused in alienating the children from the targeted parent at all costs. They don't care. The alienating parent obviously has a severe personality disorder. Now, I'm not a psychologist or clinician, but I have heard enough experts talk about this, and in all the books, the textbooks about parental alienation, medical journals, people who are normal just don't do this to their children. So something is going on with the alienating parent initially. It is not unusual for me to hear clients of mine tell me they have a narcissistic ex-spouse or a sociopathic ex-spouse. I take those terms tongue-in-cheek because who knows what the diagnosis is. But when you hear enough of that, you know that normal people just don't do this to their children. So something is going on there with their personalities. Alienating parents will continue to breach court orders. This we hear consistently. It doesn't matter what the judge says. If there is a visitation schedule, they defy it. I had a client once who had her children all ready to go to Disney World. It was during her vacation period. The dad kept the children 2 extra days into his visitation, well into hers. There went the trip. Plane tickets were basically not used. She had to pay for them. The children didn't have their trip. And again, the court order said this was her visitation time. This was the time with her children had with her, a trip that the children were looking forward to, a trip that she had paid in advance. And yet it all went out the window. Breach of contract. I hear this consistently. He or she does this or that. The children aren't delivered to me on time. They're not picked up on time. They just continue to breach court orders. So if you have that going on, more than likely there's parental alienation taking place. And finally, the alienating parent is not willing to consider the behavior is damaging and therefore continues the alienation. Understand that these alienators continue to believe, and whether they actually believe it or not, it's irrelevant because they state it blatantly, that they are protecting the child, that they are there for the child where the targeted parent isn't. They've, remember I've said earlier that they've elevated their traits. They become the soothsayer. They become the only parent that that child needs. And they are not willing to consider that what they're doing to the child is damaging. And it doesn't matter if 10 clinicians and 10 attorneys would stand in front of them and tell them what they're doing is damaging. And therefore, they will continue the alienation. They stand firm to what they're doing is okay. Why do the courts and medical professionals not acknowledge parental alienation? Well, that's a pretty strong statement, so let me start with it's not that they don't acknowledge it. It is a source of confusion within the legal and mental health professionals. And the reason there is there are discrepancies amongst the legal and mental health professionals regarding abuse versus parental alienation. And which is it? They have parents coming in saying, my ex is abusive, leaves the children home alone. They have kids in the courtroom. Oh, my goodness, they bring them in the courtroom, or they bring them to see a judge, or they take them to a therapist. And those children who have already been brainwashed, they start to confirm whatever the alienator says. And the courts go, well, something must be going on. The children wouldn't say that. And it all starts to unravel. So it's not that they don't acknowledge. They really don't, sometimes just don't know what to do with it. And so children end up being placed in the wrong home. The parent who is doing the alienating gets full custody. And so we really do need to educate the courts and medical professionals about the tenets of parental alienation and how to recognize it in its early stages so that it can be diffused. Why the courts typically get parental alienation all wrong. According to Dr. Stephen Miller, courts get it wrong almost 100% of the time because the alienating parent is either borderline, narcissistic, sociopathic, or a combination of all three and are master manipulators. I mean, if you're dealing with this, I see you nodding your head right now, and I hear it over and over in my practice. They're so good at what they do. Oh my goodness, I went to court and you should have seen her. She was amazing in the courtroom. And then we left and she did whatever it was that she did. Yes, they are master manipulators and they can fool the judges. Alienators are great at staying calm in the court while the targeted parent who has PTSD seems unstable. And these are all false impressions. So think about it. You go to court, you're like, but Your Honor, you don't understand. He's doing this, and you sound all unraveled. And your ex is standing there cool, calm, and collected. The courts see the cool, calm, and collected person as, you know what? They're so pulled together. They seem to do a great job with the children. And look at this nutcase. She's all hysterical. When the truth is, you're hysterical because you have been traumatized. Your children have been traumatized. And Mr. Calm is over there. Or Miss Calm is over there. Just standing, cool and collective. So it's all about the appearance. Another reason is the alienating parent is pathologically immersed in an unhealthy way with the child, and boundaries are violated via adultification. Adultification is when the child sort of becomes the other adult in this relationship. They begin to feel sorry for the parent. In other words, they feel so bad for dad because mom left. She had a boyfriend and dad's all by himself and he doesn't have anybody. And so I'm there for dad. So they take on this parental role, even though they're 6 years old and there's no way they can be the parent. But yet that happens almost always with an alienating situation. Another reason that the courts get it wrong is the child aligns so well with the alienating parent via the brainwash that the alienator appears in the court as the better parent. This is all through the Stockholm syndrome, that brainwashing kind of thing. We see this with people who have been kidnapped. If we think back at some of the kidnapping situations where the person who's been kidnapped is held against their will in horrible conditions, and yet they feel sorry for their perpetrator. So when the courts see one parent who the child seems to be so enamored with and they get along so well with that parent, it's impossible to believe that that parent's doing anything wrong. So they see that parent as the better parent. The courts often fail to recognize how completely a child can be manipulated to turn against a good parent. Many courts believe that if a child fears or hates a parent, that the targeted parent must have done something to deserve it. Maybe not the big story that the child tells. Maybe the child says, my mom is never home at night. She has all these boyfriends. She's never there. Okay. Maybe what happened is the child was asleep one morning and mom took that time to walk the trash down to the end of the driveway and the child woke up and, oh, where's mom? Where's mom? And mom walks in the door and goes, oh, honey, I'm so sorry. You were asleep. I just went down to take the trash to the end of the driveway. Well, that morphs into the alienating parent gets that story. Before you know it, that story snowballs into mom is never, ever home. So even at some place, the courts just don't understand or they fail to recognize that the child can be so completely manipulated, which brings me to the last reason. And that's even if the courts recognize some aspects of alienation, they often conclude that the targeted parent must have some responsibility in why the child feels the way they do. So what happens is the targeted parent gets victimized a second time because now the court is like, well, you must have done something or the child would not feel that way. You know, children just don't lie. Truth is, children do lie. And the truth is, they can be manipulated 100%. And this is why we need to educate the courts. There are 8 symptoms of parental alienation. Parental alienation is a term that was coined by Dr. Richard Gardner in the 80s. And these symptoms have been the benchmarks used by most professionals in the field of parental alienation. I'm going to go over the 8 symptoms with you and see if you recognize any of them or all of them. You don't need to have all of them, although some of you will. But even if you have 1 or 2, you have an alienating situation taking place. The first one is the child devalues and denigrates one parent over another. A parent they always had a terrific relationship with, suddenly they don't. This is not about teenage angst or a phase. This is about a child who completely devalues the parents. They feel it's okay to be rude to the parent. The parent calls them, they can blatantly ignore phone calls. Disrespect. So it goes from one extreme, child used to love and care about the parent, and now they completely disrespect. So let's take a situation where your child's entering terrible teens, as some people claim. Now, there's terrible twos, terrible teens, but they're entering this place of in their lives where they start to individuate. They don't want to be around their parents that much. But a child that is entering that time will still answer texts, respond to them, will still answer phone calls. When a child stops that and they feel justified doing it, and they just denigrate that parent, there's parental alienation. Number two symptom of parental alienation, that is the child has a lack of ambivalence. Lack of ambivalence about the way the child feels about the targeted parent becomes very clear. They have no wishy-washy on this one. They love one parent and they hate the other, and there's no middle ground. So when you start to see that they adore the alienating parent and they can't stand you, you've got parental alienation moving in, and very rapidly. Number three is the child has frivolous reasons for not wanting to see the parent. And when I mean frivolous reasons, I actually had a situation once where a child said, and literally, I can't stand Dad anymore because he didn't let me order what I wanted when we were in Hawaii. I'm sorry. That's a pretty minor reason to hate a parent. Studies have been done on children who have been severely abused by parents, and they still want to be with their parents. So the dad not allowing a child to order what they wanted in Hawaii as a reason to not want to see the targeted parent has parental alienation written all over it, especially if the child is exhibiting other symptoms, like not returning phone calls to the targeted parent or not returning texts. So this starts to look very much like parental alienation. Number four, child claims to be an independent thinker and attests that their decision is of their own accord and not of the alienating parent. In other words, the child will insist that no one encourage them to feel or act the way they do. For example, I can't stand Dad. Dad is, he's the worst father. No, and nobody's telling me. I feel this way all by myself. My mother, my aunts, nobody is talking me into this because you know what? He's terrible. I know it all by myself and nobody's telling me that. What the example I gave you is very brazen, but I've heard them. Amazingly, I've heard them. So when the child really puts their hand on their hip and swears, this is their decision, red flags should go up that they're being coached. Number five, the child has no guilt for alienating the targeted parent. They feel completely justified for feeling the way they do. Children with normal, healthy relationships with their parents, they get upset with their parents and they feel guilty about it. You know, they go in their bedrooms, they're like, I'm so mad at Mom. Everybody feels so bad. She's my mom. I love her. But these children feel no guilt. If you're the targeted parent, they feel no guilt about cussing the targeted parent out, being rude, making scenes. The parent shows up for a school concert. They have no qualms about walking up to them and saying things like, I don't want you here. I didn't invite you. They have no guilt for the way that they treat the targeted parent. So if you're starting to see that, there may be some parental alienation taking place. Another symptom of parental alienation is that the child has automatic support of the alienator. And what I mean is that if the child is disrespectful or rude to the targeted parent, the alienating parent will condone and validate. Let's step out for a minute and take a healthy divorce. Two people get divorced, but they co-parent well together. One of the children becomes disrespectful, let's say, to Mom. Mom calls the dad and says, little Aaron mouthed off at me and didn't do his homework. And the father says, put Aaron on the phone. Aaron gets on the phone. He said, you didn't do your homework. You talk back to your mother. You're punished, or you're grounded. Or this weekend when you're at my house, you're staying in. Co-parenting. But what happens with parental alienation is that the alienating parent condones. So the child may be at Dad's, doesn't like what Dad's doing, calls the mom. Dad didn't do anything wrong. Keep in mind, Dad did not do anything wrong. He may have said something like, it's 10:30, bedtime is 10. You're past bedtime. You have two tests tomorrow at school. Let's go. Let's go to bed. And the child doesn't like that and calls the mom. And while they're talking to the mom, they're like, you know, dad, shut up. You're ignorant. I don't have to listen to you. You're a loser. And then the mom says, you know, honey, I understand. You know, dad's always been like that. He's been a loser since the time we got married. This is why I'm not married to him. Bedtime, 10 o'clock. Are you kidding? You're 12 now. You don't have to go to bed at 10:30. This is how he is. Again, not in the camp to co-parent. They're definitely maligning the other parent. And as a result, they're condoning and validating the child's disrespect. Another symptom is the child parrots and borrows scenarios from the alienating parent that are not age appropriate to the child. So that means the child's speech pattern begins to sound exactly like the alienating parent. And the child will have similar grievances with the targeted parent as does the alienating parent. So for example, a six-year-old says things like, I can't stand dad's girlfriend. She's such a slut. Well, who knows children at age six who speak like that? Or how about the 10-year-old boy who says, you know what, mom just decorate. Like, did she really have to decorate? All she does is she spends her money on decorating. This is like, did she really need that dining room set? Really? I'm a full-grown adult. It wouldn't even occur to me to ever question my parents' decorating decisions when I was growing up. How about you? My guess is you didn't. And yet these children will carry the same grievances as the alienated parent against the targeted one, and they begin to sound exactly like them. I hear from parents all the time, oh my goodness, you wouldn't believe it. I'm hearing my ex's voice through the child. Now, children do take on mannerisms of their parents, but this is different. This is notched up. You almost hear as though you're battling it out with your ex-spouse, because you sort of are, because that ex-spouse is sort of channeled through the child. And the last symptom that I want to address about parental alienation is one that is very sad, and that is the child spreads their animosity to people, family, and friends of the targeted parent. The child ignores once-loved grandparents, aunts, uncles, and cousins. I was at an event not too long ago when somebody came up to me and said that there had been alienation in their family, not with her parents, but with a cousin. And that she hadn't seen a cousin in like 15 years. And that speaks to how insidious parental alienation is, because the alienator not only elevates themselves, has the child align with themselves, but they take away the child's support system, which includes once beloved grandparents, aunts, uncles, and cousins. I have clients that are grandparents of children that they haven't seen because their son-in-law or daughter-in-law has taken that child away. So it really does, the tentacles just go completely out there. And so that's something that we really have to look at. If you notice that your child used to love your mother, your father, your sisters, your brothers, and now they can't reach out to that child is not returning phone calls or isn't texting them, or there are birthday parties, weddings, graduations, and the child is not attending, more than likely you have parental alienation. And again, this is always on the heels of those people did not do anything wrong. We're not talking about a child who has a terrible argument with a cousin and they fought for a reason between the two of them and now they're not talking. This is not what I'm addressing. What I'm approaching is the concept that the child is no longer communicating at all. It's sort of like just a wall has come down. The child is on the other side. And the alienating parent wants it that way, because the more they isolate the child from the support system, the more they have the child in their camp. Many times, an alienating parent will claim that they are keeping the child away from the targeted parent. How noble of them, yes, because the other parent is abusive. But a genuinely abused child will not present with parental alienation symptoms. Let me say that over again. A genuinely abused child will not present with parental alienation symptoms. So the eight factors that I just addressed with you are not symptoms that appear with abused children. They appear with parental alienation. So if you're seeing 1, 2, 5, or all of those 8 symptoms, you have parental alienation. The other piece to understand is that if a parent is really abusive, so it's like, say, for example, your ex really thinks you're abusive. They don't take this route. They start to get the police and pediatricians and social services involved. There is another route that a parent would take if they truly believed that the other parent was abusive. So keep in mind, and I will say it a third time, and notice I have it in capital letters, and there's a reason. A genuinely abused child will not present with parental alienation symptoms. So I have a theory, and I call it high bar, low bar. And it's a manifestation of splitting, where a child believes one parent is awful and the other is wonderful. And you know, so basically the alienating parent is the perfect one and the target parent is horrible. Let me give you an example of what I mean by this. So we have a little girl and she goes to school and her parents have to pick the child up from school. There's no bus service. So the weeks that dad has the little girl, he picks the child up from school. And the weeks that mom has the little girl, she picks the child up from school. So one day the little girl is waiting and waiting and waiting for dad to pick her up. All the other children have been picked up. She's standing there all alone and the teachers have gone inside and nobody knows she's standing there. And it's been an hour. Dad's not there. And he calls her on her cell phone and says, "Oh my goodness, I forgot that this was my time to pick you up. I'm in a meeting. I'll be there in an hour. Can you walk down to the little cafe? I will be there." So the little girl walks down and she's about 12. I say little girl. 12 years old is a little girl to me. She walks down to the cafe that's about 2 blocks away, waits for dad, and he gets there in about an hour. Keep in mind, he's now 2 hours late. She gets in the car and he said, "Honey, I'm so sorry, but I got..." "Dad, it's okay. I understand. It wasn't your fault. It's okay." Now, she waited outside in cold, windy weather. She walked down to the cafe. It was starting to get dark and rain a little bit, and she didn't have her raincoat, so her hair got wet. And she sat in the cafe and waited for an hour for dad. And yet she's forgiving. She understands. "Dad, don't worry." And in fact, she even says, "I know you worked so hard to take care of me. Dad, don't worry. It's okay." Very low bar for dad. Very low bar. He can do nothing wrong. It's mom's time to pick the little girl up from school. Mom leaves work the same time she does every day. She allocates about an extra 10 minutes should there be traffic snafus. But on one particular day, there is a huge, huge holdup on the highway. And she texts her daughter and she said, "I may be about 5 minutes late. There's a huge backup on the highway." The little girl is standing with the rest of her friends in the carpool group, and one teacher comes out and says to the commander of the carpool, "By the way, there's a backup on the highway. So any of the parents who are coming from that direction may be a few minutes late." The mom arrives at school. She's actually 10 minutes late. Little girl gets in the car. She doesn't talk to her mom. Mom says, "I'm so sorry, honey. I did leave early. I always leave early. You know, I'm never late." And the little girl's response is, "You're so irresponsible. You're a terrible mother. You're late? Really? I had to wait outside 10 more minutes? It's cold. You are so irresponsible. I hate you. This is how you always are." Not forgiving. The circumstances were completely out of the mother's control. Other parents encountered the same thing. The mom was only 10 minutes late, and yet that's the reception she received from her daughter. A very high bar of expectation. Mom is always wrong. She can do no right. And any mistake she makes is then blown out of proportion. And when the little girl got home, she called her dad to tell him how irresponsible mom was, and dad agreed. So my theory of high bar, low bar is rampant through parental alienation. Again, they call it splitting. The child believes they've aligned themselves with one parent against the other. But I use the term high bar, low bar. In this case, dad, very low bar. No expectations by this daughter. And whatever he does wrong or whatever happens, he is never wrong. And the mom, no matter how much she tries, she's spinning her wheels. She's always going to be wrong. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's always the mom and always the dad. It can be flip-flop. Dad could be the one who can never do anything right, and mom is always perfect. But I want you to understand this concept of high bar, low bar when it comes to parental alienation. And if you're seeing that, you probably have a nice case of parental alienation going on. So let's talk about some of the remedies. I want to start with the don'ts first, because we do some of these without knowing it. The first thing is, don't change your parenting. Stay the parent. This is the hardest don't, because you want to parent your children. You want them to learn responsibility. You want them to take out the trash. You want them to do things for an allowance. You want them to do their homework. And yet, when you say, you know what, take out the trash, and you say it 5 or 10 times, and then they call the other parent, the parent's like, yeah, well, she's a nag. Come on. This is why I'm not around her. You think she nags about the trash? You should have seen what I went through. And so it's very hard to stay on task, but you have to. You always have to be the parent. So stay the parent and don't change your parenting style. You may have to alter it just a tiny bit, but still stay the parent. And that leads me into, don't try to one-up the alienator. So, and this is really tough, because if they're buying things for the children, if they are giving them things, and you can't do that, maybe the other spouse has more money and you just can't buy a new car for your child, or you can't take them on a fancy vacation. It's very hard to not try to do so, but don't. Stay the parent and stay within your framework. Don't try to one up. Another don't is, don't badmouth your ex. That's really tough. It's really tough when you hear your ex in the background calling you names or saying the child doesn't have to listen to you. But you just stand on your own. And if you hear that and you just say, okay, I heard that, but guess what? This is what we're doing. And just not badmouth. Don't engage in it. The other don't is, be dismissive of your child's feelings. Listen to them. Listen to what they're saying. Because a lot of times there's hidden messages, or they're saying things and you really aren't hearing it. And I know that's hard, but if they're saying they feel a certain way, acknowledge it. Doesn't mean you have to agree with it, but acknowledge how they're feeling. Another don't is, lose your temper. And that is tough. We all do it. I am not going to say I didn't, and I'm sure that you don't. But you have to keep your temper as much on guard as possible. Because even if you raise your voice, which, let's face it, parents raise their voices. But if you do, that gets into that high bar, low bar situation. So try to keep your temper at bay. And the last is, don't reverse alienation. The goal is not to polarize the child in the other direction. You want to co-parent. You cannot help what the alienating parent does. Can't. They are going to do whatever they want to do. You can't stop it. The only people who can stop that is a judge, the courts. And even at that, it's questionable. But you can't change that person's behavior. But if you try to reverse the alienation, and I've had clients come to me the same, you know, she's keeping these kids from me and I'm going to take these kids from her. Wait, stop. No. You want to co-parent. If the other parent doesn't want to co-parent, that's their problem. They're not allowed to alienate the children against you. You just stay the parent. Don't try to one-up. Don't badmouth your ex. Understand your children's feelings. Keep your temper at bay. And don't reverse alienation. Because the goal, again, is not to push the children in the other direction. Just keep them in the middle. Keep them loving dad and mom. And whatever parent is alienating, they're going to do it. And you can't stop it. But just stay focused on being the parent. And the big one I want to talk about now is, if you are alienated and you haven't seen your child, don't give up. I can't say this enough. And I've met a lot of people who have come to me and said, I've just had it. I've spent years trying to reach out. They don't return my calls. They don't. Well, don't give up. I know therapists, I know lawyers, I know friends and family will say things like, you know what? This is the way they want to be, so be it. You've tried. Enough is enough. They'll come back. They always do. Well, let me talk about parental alienation for a little bit, because the truth is, by giving up, you will sever the contact with the child. You will. And the studies conclude that the children don't come back because the reality and the brainwashing that has taken place just continues. And it's like a snowball effect. And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger with time. And those false narratives that I've mentioned earlier in this presentation become the reality. As false as they become the reality. So that contact becomes severed. So don't give up. Continue to send cards and letters. Continue to reach out. Another reason why you don't want to give up is because it hurts the child terribly and they will feel abandoned even if they refuse to see you. I've talked to hundreds of adults who were alienated from a parent, who are now in their 30s and 40s. And the overriding advice that they always say to me when they talk to me about this always is, tell parents not to give up. And they will then say, oh, I was terrible to my father, or I was hideous to my mother. Oh, I can't believe how I rejected. But then she gave up. And then I realized, oh, well, you know, I really ruined that, you know, because the truth is the child is the victim. They are doing the dirty work of your former spouse. The child is the innocent victim of this, no matter what their age. They're the innocent victim. So if the alienation starts when they're 10, 11, 12, and they buy into it, they get to be 25, 30. That's the reality. They also know that they were part of it. And then if the parent who was reaching out stopped, then they realize, oh, well, they just abandoned, and that's the damage is beyond done. And so that's the pain. Also, it's hard for those children to just reach out, even though they're adults. They just know that it's been so awful. And there's so much they have to face with being part of that alienation. It just is very difficult for them to wake up one day at 25 or 30 and go, oh, you know, I was part of parental alienation. Now I'm going to call my dad. I know I haven't seen him in 15 years, and I'm sure he can't wait to hear from me. That's great if that happens, but typically it doesn't. And the hurt and the bad stories and the false narratives have been so rooted in their whole body and their mind, and just it's all part of them, that it's so hard to step out of that. So don't give up. The other reason I say don't give up is because if you do, it feeds into your ex's statement that you're a bad person. You give up? Wow, the alienator, see? Told you dad didn't love you. He doesn't even send you birthday cards. I told you mom was a terrible person. What? She didn't come to your graduation. Okay, yeah, you did tell her 10 times she better not be there. But you know what? You go and you sit in the back. They don't have to see you. And then send a card that says, I was at your graduation and you look so nice. And oh, you carried those beautiful red roses. Say something to let them know that you were there. Never give up. Now here's some of the do's. Because you were not powerless. Number one, if you have a custody arrangement, children are underage, you can take legal action when warranted. And what do I mean by that? Well, if your spouse, ex-spouse, is not bringing the children home after visitation on time, or if they are interfering with your visitation, file a contempt charge. Most jurisdictions charge anywhere from $25 to $35 to file. You don't even need your attorney. Have documentation of when your visitation is violated. I will tell you that judges hate that. This is really concrete. When you walk into a courtroom and you have some vague allegations, that's tough for them to make a decision. But when you are in front of a judge and you say, Your Honor, I get the children every other Sunday, and over the past 4 months, every other Sunday has been violated. Here are the dates and times that the children were supposed to be delivered to my house after my ex's visitation. And they were delivered on these days and at these times, and they are completely conflicted with what the custody arrangement has been written to be, then the judge looks at those children are being denied time with that parent, meaning you, and judges will see what the other parent is doing. They may not call it parental alienation. They may call it something like, well, they're just trying to bother you, or they're just trying to give you a hard time. Well, they are, and they're also alienating the children. And if you have that written in stone, get yourself into court, because here's one thing I can tell you. Judges don't like this. And If this happens enough, the judge may decide to change custody arrangements. And what the alienator may get is a horrible plate of humble pie, because that 50-50 arrangement may turn into you get full custody, or the targeted parent gets full custody, and the alienator gets visitation, maybe on Wednesdays, maybe just every other weekend, or maybe, just maybe, supervised visitation, which means a social worker sits with that parent every time they meet with the children. So please, if you have children and there's a very defined custody arrangement and it's written in your divorce decree, take legal action when warranted. Don't back down to that, because you have the law on your side. It is astounding to me how many times I talk to people who say, well, I don't know, you know, can I do something about that? You sure can. And the power is in the document of the custody arrangement. So take legal action when you can. Another do is take responsibility for any wrongs you may have created. If your children really do have a gripe with you, and of course, a gripe with you does not equal parental alienation. Let me say that again. A gripe with you does not equal parental alienation. You do not deserve to be alienated from your children, and your children do not deserve to be kept from you. However, if you do have any wrongdoings that you feel like you may have created, and again, this is just something in your heart, take responsibility for them. Not so much to say, I know I'm being alienated and this is because I did X, Y, and Z, but just to let your children know that when you do something wrong, you take responsibility, so that when the alienating parent starts to say things to them like, you know what, your dad is always right, and he doesn't take any responsibility for anything that he does, and he does all these wrong things, the children can say, they may not say it, maybe they will, maybe they won't, but somewhere in their brain, it goes, you know what, that's not really true, because just last week, dad apologized for and whatever it was. So always take responsibility for any wrongs that you think you may have created. Always give unconditional love. Children need to be loved unconditionally. So you don't want to start with, well, you know what? If you really want to go on that trip, then you better have your visitation with me. You better be there on time. Please, that's not the way to show unconditional love. You love them no matter what. If there is severe alienation taking place, you can be rest assured that your ex is saying things like, you know, the targeted parent, whether it's mom and dad, doesn't love you, likes their boyfriend or girlfriend better, they like their job better, they're a workaholic, whatever they're saying, they are trying to negate that unconditional love. So it's your responsibility to show that unconditional love. Do continue to make contact no matter what it takes. I tell a story often, and I'd like to tell it here, about a mother who got divorced from her ex-husband. After 7 years of marriage, they had a 6-year-old little girl. She left the marriage because she found out he had been cheating the entire time of their marriage with a high school sweetheart. Actually, the affair began before they got married. Isn't that sweet? In any event, there was a 50-50 visitation with the little girl. Mom had the little girl 2 weeks, then dad would have the girl 2 weeks. Everything went smoothly until the little girl got to be about 10 years old. She started saying things like she didn't love her mom, didn't want to be with her mom, afraid of her mom. Mom had no idea where this came from. Mom had always been the same mom she had always been. At age 11, the little girl started to not want to see her mother at all. The dad took the little girl to court. The judge listened to the child and let a 12-year-old make a decision about her custody arrangement. And so it came to the girl would live with her dad and see her mother when she wanted to. So there was no visitation in place. Again, the mom had no idea why this happened. The mom was smart, and she decided to write a letter once a month to her daughter the first day of the month, and she numbered the letters. And in the letters, she started with dear in her daughter's name. This is letter number one, and I will write to you once a month for as long until forever. Never once in the letter did she badmouth the dad. Never once did she talk about herself. She would say things like, this is letter number 12. Oh, you must be graduating middle school. Oh, I bet you're, you know, you're you're getting really excited for the dance or whatever it was that was pertinent to the girl's life. This went on for years. The mom assumed her daughter got the letters and just wasn't responding because she never got the letters back. And of course, she didn't get a response. Well, it turned out the dad had received letter one and two. And, oh, this isn't good. This mom's going to write a letter every month. Is she nuts? So he opened up a P.O. box, which is a post office box at the nearby post office, and just had all his mail rounded there for years. And he had a key to the post office box. So the girl grows and she's getting older and the mom's sending these monthly letters the little girl never gets. Now she's not such a little girl any longer. And when she's 17, the dad takes a business trip. He's gone for a week, leaves the girl home alone. She's almost of age. And he comes home late on a Friday night and the girl decided as a surprise she would clean up the house for her dad really nicely, make dinner for him, have him waiting for dinner, and go pick up his mail. She never did that before because he always picked up his mail, but the key was in his top dresser drawer and she went to the post office. And when she went to the post office, there was a letter addressed to her. It was one of the monthly letters and she opened it. And at this point, it was something. This is letter 400 and whatever it was. The girl realized that her mother had been writing to her for years and this child had received none of the letters. She went home and when dad came in, she confronted him. And his comment to her was, well, your mom didn't love you. She goes, what do you mean? You told me all those years that mom didn't love me, that she got, that the reason she left is you wanted nothing to do with me, that I was the reason for why the two of you split up. Again, folks, this is a false narrative. And she's been writing to me all these years. Well, what could dad say at this point? So the girl called her mother, who was very smart, always had her phone number at the bottom and her address. And the girl called her mom and mom said, come on over. And they rekindled the relationship. I do want to tell you that the girl chose to live with her mom from that point on. The mom sent her to college. The girl is now in her mid-20s. The mom and the daughter have a wonderful relationship and the girl no longer talks to her dad. I'm not a proponent of that. I really feel like children should see both parents, but this dad set the stage to ultimately lose his daughter. He lied to her. So the truth is the dad cheated on the mom. The mom didn't want to be in the marriage any longer. They split up. She wanted to co-parent with the dad. The dad was angry. The dad, remember I talked about revenge earlier? How dare she divorce me? Didn't matter that he cheated on her. Okay, forgot that part. But the mom divorced me. How dare her? And so they started off with a 50-50 visitation schedule and custody 50-50. But the dad worked on the little girl. Mom doesn't love you. She left because of you. Doesn't want to be with you. By the time the girl was prepubescent, she didn't want to see the mom any longer. Dad paraded the girl into the courtroom and the girl said, I don't like my mom. She's negligent. She left me. She wants no part of me. Judge agreed with the child because remember, they don't think the children can lie. Dad and the daughter looked like they had a great relationship. Something must have been amiss with the mom. Nothing was amiss with the mom. Mom did not give up. Remember, folks, I said, don't give up. And she did what she could. Courts were no longer on her side, but she reached out to her daughter and she never gave up. And it paid off. I'm sad to say that the girl doesn't have a relationship with her dad, but you know, when you do something like that, you have to realize that the results may not be the best. So when I say continue to make contact, really do, because you never know how well it could turn out. And the last remedy or do is create good memories and remind your children of those memories when they claim they don't want to see you. So when they tell you, we've never had a good time with you. You're terrible. We don't want to see you. Remind them. Don't you remember the time we went to Niagara Falls? How about the time we went to the beach? Pick out pivotal moments where you guys had so much fun. And when you do see them, create good memories. Don't talk about what's going on with the dad or the mom or the divorce. Just create some good memories so that they can remember those. There are court-appointed professionals to help with parental alienation, and I'm going to mention a few of them here, and I'm going to oversimplify it. They can become very complex in and of themselves, but I just want to touch on them so if you hear these terms, you will know what they are. more importantly, if you feel like you need one of these professionals, you will also know what they are. So let's start with the best interest attorney, also known as guardian ad litem. And the best interest attorney is supposed to be unbiased, meaning they don't work for your attorney, they don't work for your spouse's attorney. They are completely unbiased, appointed by the courts. Now, keep in mind, all court systems or all court jurisdictions are pretty, closed communities, meaning the professionals all know each other. So even though your child's best interest attorney is assigned to them and has nothing to do with your attorneys, they may know each other. So I want you to know that. So they can be friends, but they are supposed to be unbiased. The best interest attorney is not only an attorney, but they often have additional training in situations where children are impacted and how they're impacted by divorce, so that they have some idea of the psychological impact that divorce has on children and some of the warning signs that children will show when they have too much anxiety or too much stress, or if they're entering in a depressive way. And they will do things such as maybe meet with the children, observe them with each parent, so that they can get an idea of what would be the best custody arrangement for the children post-divorce. So that is a best interest attorney assigned usually during the divorce process. You can also have a custody evaluator and a custody evaluation done. And this gets to be very extensive, because a custody evaluator will meet with each parent individually. They will meet with each of the children individually. They will meet with the children and see how they interact with the parents. They will also contact mental health professionals that the children have interacted with, and meaning their pediatrician, sometimes their therapist if the children have one. They will talk to the school counselor. They will talk to teachers. They will talk to the children's coaches. So they do almost what I call like a full-blown family investigation. The custody evaluator is often used also for decisions regarding custody. And while it may seem a panacea, it comes with its own problems. A custody evaluator could be biased. If they like one parent better than the other, well, then the parent who's on the short end of the stick can be really on the short end of the stick, and ergo that can hurt the children as far as the rulings. And keep in mind, judges are very, very favorable to custody evaluations. So if you get a bad evaluation, for whatever reasons, that really becomes etched in stone. The judges want to make a clean decision and a quick decision, and they rely heavily on custody evaluations because they know that they are more complex and more extensive, and they feel as though that professional, the custody evaluator, has spent a lot of time with the family. Maybe they have, maybe they haven't, but they basically hold a lot of weight on that evaluation. So they can be good or they can be fatal. So keep that in mind when you ask to have a custody evaluation performed. And then there is also the parent coordinator. And the parent coordinator is often assigned after the divorce or after the divorce and then parental alienation surfaces. The parent coordinator is usually a licensed social worker or another type of mental health professional who has some training on how the court system works. Maybe they take 10, 12 hours in that kind of work, so that they can communicate with the courts when things are not going well with the family. So parent coordinator will be brought in if post-divorce issues are arising, parents are interfering with each other's visitation, the children aren't doing well in school, the current situation isn't working, or when I say the current situation, I mean the current custody situation isn't working, or there's flaws, or parents are misbehaving. So the parent coordinator will come in, kind of assess what's going on. Again, they may interview each parent separately. Then they come in and talk with the children, see how the children interact with the parents, and they come up with plans about how they should do things. And sometimes the parenting coordinators can petition the court and have the court sanction how things are to go with, you know, who picks up the children from sports, what parent does what. And it can be helpful. Some parents have told me they find it invasive. So the parent coordinator can also do one other thing, and that is petition the courts to change custody arrangements. So let's say you have 50-50 and one of the parents is violating the other person's time with the children, and I call it more the children's time with that parent, the parent coordinator can ask the courts to change the custody arrangement. So I want to end on the note as far as these three professionals. When acting professionals become part of the litigious process rather than helping the child, they can be problematic. They can be very helpful when it goes well. When it doesn't go well, it just becomes another part of the litigious baggage. So you may need these court-appointed professionals, but know what their roles are, positive and negative, before you ask for them. There are programs that reunite targeted parents with alienated children. I do want to say here that most therapists don't help. I talk to families all the time who say, well, my children are in therapy and it doesn't seem to be helping. Because the main point is you must locate a therapist who specializes in parental alienation and does nothing else. If they are just using regular methodology, it's not going to work. The mental health professional that works with your children, if they are being alienated, that therapist must have a background in parental alienation. In fact, they should be a specialist. Anything short of that, it could go the other way. There are some programs such as Family Bridges, a workshop for troubled and alienated parent-child relationships. And then there's also Turning Points for Families, a reunification therapy for severe parental alienation with Linda Gottlieb. There are some programs in England. Now, some of these programs are pretty severe, where you have to get a court order for the child to be in the program. And part of that program is they can have absolutely no communication with the alienating parent for something like 90 days. That seems to be a benchmark amount of days that they can't see the alienating parent. So it's extreme, but they are very successful. And they turn these children around very quickly. Again, it has to be court ordered. So you have to get to the point where the court is agreeing that there's parental alienation and reunification should take place. But I did want to mention these programs for you so that if you want to take that route, you know that they're there. Let's make no bones about it. There's a long-term impact of parental alienation on children. There's a physical impact. Definitely, these children develop all kinds of physical anxiety-riddled problems, stomach problems, head problems, heart problems, back problems. I mean, and these are physical illnesses that take over their bodies and oftentimes for the rest of their lives. So let's make no bones about it. Parental alienation really does impact children negatively. They also impact them psychologically. As you can imagine, what this does to them, it rises their stress levels. Children very often will begin to do poorly in school. They will start to eliminate some of the activities that they've always loved and been engaged in, sports that they loved, or other types of communal groups, art classes, just things that they used to love, they don't love any longer. They may begin to glob onto a group of children that maybe they wouldn't have before that. Drug use starts to become prevalent, other anxiety behaviors, cutting and things like that. Now, truthfully, there's high incidence of anxiety and depression amongst teenagers anyway, and can be seen in intact families. But it's safe to believe, and studies have proven, that these children do get psychologically impacted for a very long time. So parental alienation is abusive to children. It's not healthy for them. I hope the information that I gave you today was helpful. If you have questions, I have answers. And as part of this program, you are entitled to one email with me for a short answer. And if you have a question that needs more attention, you can always contact me for a consult. Just go onto the website and click onto the calendar and we can talk personally. I hope this helps you, and if you need any more information, please visit me at www.susanschoeffer.com.